more pressure is coming from students, and there are already some surveys that says that a student not only look for social mobility and a fair return on their investment for themselves, but also they're looking for institutions that are committed to shape a better future.
The global exchange is to have conversations that matter to our mission, the Global Business School Network, and our mission to strengthen the contributions of business schools to the development needs of society. Each session features a special guest and a conversation, not only with me, but with a select group of people from our members. Today, we're thrilled to welcome Dr. Victoria Galen-Muros, who is Chief of Research and Analysis at UNESCO's International Institute of Higher Education. Welcome, Victoria.
Thank you very much, Dan, for having me here today with you and with the group of your schools.
Yeah, we're excited to have you, right? You know, I think it's fair to say that your work covers a lot of territory. You know, for me, it's a wide range of topics related to higher education, which we all care about. It's policy, it's internationalization, it's impact, it's mental health. Since we've met, I've come to appreciate the breadth of things that you're involved with. But what I like about your work is that it's also big picture, right? It's international, but it's also relevant in the local context. And that's something that's special to the Global Business School Network. We operate with this belief that the world's grand challenges are really just a mosaic of related yet distinct issues across many different contexts. And that's one of the things I see in the work that you do. And it puts you in a position that I think we describe you sometimes as a bridge between policy and practice. So we're really excited to have you with us today to talk about your work. But before we get into all of that work stuff, what I'd love you to talk with us a little bit about is your earlier career experience working with innovation ecosystems. And then maybe tell us a little bit about the pathway that you've taken to your current position, just to help us to get to know you a little bit better, Victoria.
Okay, Dan, thank you again. Thank you, and thank you, GBSN, for this invitation. We are in times in which we have to have lots of conversations. We'll get to that later. You see a bit about myself. Well, where can I start? Well, maybe it's relevant to you to say that I have a background in business management. It's not obvious for the position in which I am today or I have been in the last few years, but I do have that background. And after my undergraduate, I wanted to broaden my experience to the social sciences. So I did my master's at the London School of Economics on social research methods. Then by chance, I came across a project that was focused on the impact of the university in the city. And I actually did fall in love with university management, maybe on two sides. One on how one manages such complex organizations from my management background, but also how one can make a difference through the university in the society, maybe from more a social sciences perspective. So I ended up doing my PhD and a few University Amsterdam on university business cooperation that involved teaching research and knowledge transfer. But it wasn't until later when I was already working on advising universities on management topics, when I realized that many public policies were insufficient or outdated or imperfect. So then it was then when I started working on higher ed policies as well. And as you say, I've been working at the interface on policy and management. I worked for the European Commission, at the OECD, and the last 4 years at UNESCO on this, but also while doing executive training to university managers, doing consulting projects with both government and university leaders, and still some teaching that I love in master's and PhD programs in both business and also higher ed. So I guess I've made sure that even when at some point I went more to policies, I've always remained in touch with the ground and higher ed.
Well, I think from the start, it seems to me like your emphasis on the connection between the university, or in our case, the business school, and the city or the community and thinking about them as a catalyst for innovation, I think from the start is really important, and it must have informed your work and career in many different ways as you've developed. So this is great. We have a lot to talk about. I hope you don't mind. I want to start with a little bit of a provocative question, because the last time, Victoria, you and I talked, it was at the end of our conversation. You said a few things that intrigued me. We didn't have time to go a little bit further with this, but I wrote them down. I hope I didn't get them incorrect. But you said, and you're referring to a panel you had been involved with in Monterey, if I remember correctly. And you said something like, higher education will look drastically different in 5 years. I wrote that down. I hope I didn't get that wrong. And you also said, you mentioned the possibility of what you called a perfect storm. And so I wrote down perfect storm. And then I wrote down something, I wrote, business schools and universities are at a crossroads. So I left that meeting.
One has to be very careful what one said, particularly when things are written down and brought to you later. But yes, that is correct. I stand by my words. I don't know, Dan, where to start? I guess that I believe that universities have never faced so many challenges at the same time. And this perfect storm that I was referring to, it's due to this poly crisis. It's really revealing an extremely complex scenario. And I can't be comprehensive, so I won't aim for that. But there's some both external and internal challenges that maybe just quickly highlight. Maybe the first of it, because it's probably the one we're talking about the most, is geopolitics and the way it's affecting higher education in like very different and many ways, whether this is in terms of student mobility, not just through the visas and more legal aspects, but also the interest in going to a certain country from student or staff, and therefore the ability to attract foreign talent, research collaborations that some of them have been plainly banned, institutional autonomy. Unfortunately, we've seen more interference than ever before from government in higher ed. University public funding, continuous budget cuts everywhere affecting access, equity, but also quality aspects. But this is not just that. External aspects as well are related with sustainable development, capturing the 17 SDGs, then maybe we have a chance to go through that later. And competition from alternative education providers, this monopoly of advanced and relevant knowledge that universities have always thought that they have, well, it's not there anymore. But this is only some of the external challenges. Really, we go externally, we are seeing that in many universities, there are precarious conditions of staff, like working conditions, short contracts, insufficient salaries in many cases. There's also increasing mental health issues. You were mentioning before in students, but also staff. Universities have to serve a much more diverse student body. There is a question, big question in the relevance of the education that is being providing and calling for this realignment with the labor market and the integration of new education formats, micro-credentials and stuff. But universities are going through a compulsory digitalization process in all aspects. So not just the management one, but also currently, I guess we're all trying to understand specifically the rapidly evolving AI scenario and also the effects that it will have in higher ed. This opens questions about cybersecurity, ethics, but all this is also considering that there is still in many countries issues with the digital accessibility and the digital skills in many universities. So sometimes the base is not even there. And obviously the degree to which these issues affect business schools and universities generally are different. Many business schools will have to add also many other issues because they are in particularly difficult or complex scenarios to the one that I've mentioned. But I think the key thing is that there is a large question that has been posed in the value of higher education, and that's the value of business school, both for individuals who wonder, is it worth attending a business school? But also for societies in which governments might wonder, is it worth investing in business school? And I guess how to deal with all these challenges, which is different for each school, and how to navigate this storm is something that we're working now with both governments, but also higher education leaders in many different countries. Because to answer in one sentence your question in a that I've already spent a couple of minutes on, higher education will have to look drastically different in 5 years to stay afloat.
I'm almost sorry I asked, Victoria. That's what I want to say great, but it sounds positive to say great. A great list of challenges facing higher education. So the reason why you brought this up at the end of our meeting is really not just because any single challenge, right? That's driving a lot of us. For example, you know, I think AI is a big deal. The thing about AI is that I don't think any institution can afford to ignore what's happening with AI, right? For example, but it's the combination of so many different issues that are affecting higher education and shaping their next steps, both the global, you said external and internal, but also global and local. I love how your point is that, you know, we think about these from your point of view, such a high level international view, but when you bring things down to the local context, there's local politics, right? There's issues related to location and, you know, challenges related to mobility and things like that. It's amazing the kinds of things. And you have your finger on the pulse of this. And you. I think during that same discussion, you sometimes describe your role as expressing tough love, right? It's right, you know, so right. So in your role, looking at these things, I remember reading, for example, a report about autonomy in universities, right? And that was a while ago. And autonomy is one of those big issues that is affecting U.S. institutions right now and how they think about this. I remember you're writing about international mobility. And whether or not internationalization is part of the higher education plan for the country is an important question. In many cases, it seems like it's now part of the plan for the country, but in a different way, right? It's about limiting rather than expanding the internationalization. So thanks for that introduction. It gives us so many different routes that we can go. But what I wanted to do is really just take that one step further. And then I want to talk about what you hinted at before, the SDGs a little bit. But I'm going to take this a little bit further. And if you had to sort of draw it down to the policy questions, I suppose, the policy themes in higher education, given your role, if you were to boil things down to the two or three things, policy themes that you think are most relevant for higher education and for business schools in particular, perhaps, could you do that just quickly for us before we move on to talk about some SDG questions?
I guess this thing of trying to bring the voices of higher education managers to policymakers and try to really be very concise about what is it really needed. You say two or three things, I'm going to take three. Because okay, that three is already going to be difficult. I will talk about the need of autonomy, and I will bundle their academic freedom and institutional autonomy so universities and business school can continue being houses of independent and critical thinking, because honestly, this is the base for everything else. Then apart from that, funding and financial sustainability, not just increased public investment to ensure affordability, but also quality, but also incentivize alternative funding model, like the public and private partnership or tax incentives for university industry cooperation. Fund is critical for all the digital infrastructure that are needed, but also financial incentives for interdisciplinary research and innovation in critical areas for particularly addressing global challenges. And these need to be done sustainably. So there are universities that renegotiate their budget every year with the government that can't be. Maybe the third one, that also it's a broader one, which is about the maybe regulatory simplification and also flexibility. Ideally, governments reduce all the bureaucratic barriers to adapt curricula, accredit new programs, particularly in emerging fields, recognize foreign credentials, allow universities to partner with industry to commercialize knowledge, to engage in international collaboration, attract international talent, open international campuses. And ideally, this is not something government just facilitate, but also actively promote. Of course, these are not the only one, but if you ask me to pick three, I will pick those three.
But I like how you started the idea that your role is as this bridge. It's not only to help higher education leaders to understand what's happening with policy, but to bring the voices of higher education to policy development. And the way you frame these is really important. You talked about autonomy and how thinking about autonomy can impact the capacity of schools to do the kinds of things that need to be done. Funding, but this last one, I just want to make sure I understood it correctly. It seems like there are two dimensions to the regulatory one. One is sort of within a country. How do we simplify the bureaucracy to enable change to happen in institutions, right? Because, I always say that if an organization is incapable of changing, then it doesn't matter what's happening in the environment, right? But the bigger thing, it seems to me, you're talking about, and I know this is very important with UNESCO, is the conventions that enable countries to work together in higher education, right? Mm-hmm. So the recognition of credentials,
correct,
for example, and the way we think about things like structures for mobility. And that's an important, I know there's Victoria and then there's UNESCO and then there's everything else. It seems to me like what you're saying, at least partially, is that this is a pretty important thing for your work at UNESCO to really facilitate this kind of development. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess for us, it's the only time that UNESCO have actually put something out there about higher education that is not just analysis or recommendations or guidelines, but it's a regulation that put countries in a position in which they need to recognize foreign credentials, whether from the regions or from also the rest of the world. That is an important piece of work of UNESCO indeed, but for or from a university or a business school perspective, this is just another piece of the puzzle. It's another way in which government can facilitate their work in this respect, or in this case, from an international perspective.
Yeah, my work in business schools for a long time, it's one of those things I've always appreciated about business schools. It seems like there's a bit more international global recognition for certain types of degrees like the MBA. So, but I want to do this right now because I don't want to risk running out of time to have a good conversation about this idea that higher education institutions are under increasing pressure to demonstrate their impact on society, their positive impact on society, their impact, if you will. And I know this is something that you've done quite a bit of work on, and you and your colleagues at UNESCO. And I'm wondering if you could just tell us a little bit about that work. Maybe at the same time, we could post some things in the chat if others are following along, because it seems to me like this might be a tool that's not yet fully utilized, and we want to make sure that it does get utilized, given the strength of its emphasis on SDGs. Tell us a little bit about it's called the SET4 HE, right? So it's what is okay, the sustainable?
Let me just tell you that obviously the SDGs for us at UNESCO, a UN agency, are a bit of a framework for the work we do. And this actually comes from the need to work on this and the need to support universities come from a point in which, as you've said, the pressure has never been greater from universities to demonstrate the impact. This come from governments, this come from, we need to justify the need to fund higher education with taxpayers' money, right? Many of which have not and will not attend higher education or benefit directly from the research results. The pressure come from business, calling for more relevant teaching and research. The pressure is coming as well lately from accreditation and rankings that are adding standards and aspects related to sustainability, diversity, ethics. But more pressure is coming from students. And I don't know how much you're feeling this, but there are already some surveys that says that a student not only look for social mobility and a fair return on their investment for themselves, but also they're looking for institutions that are committed to shape a better future. This is then the generation that cares about where and in which conditions their coffee was harvested and was commercialized, or the cotton or their t-shirt. So of course they care about the institutional behavior of the place where they spend up to 4 or 5 years of their lives. Faculty as well, increasingly concerned about how much their school contributes to more sustainable future, starting for their internal policies on hiring, promotion, working conditions. So having all this, we had a lot of university leaders approaching us and saying, can you help us? Obviously, your capacity to help individual institutions is limited. So we decided to do a couple of things. We started last year a series of SDG briefs, in which we explore how universities can contribute to some aspects of the SDGs, from green campuses to knowledge transfer to policymakers, to the support of mental health, or ensuring decent working conditions for staff. But also, and I get here to what you were mentioning before, we designed a self-evaluation tool. So either universities as a whole or business school, because it actually works at two levels, can measure how and how much they contribute to the SDGs. It's called Set for HEI. I've just put the link in the chat. And it's a free online tool with a total of 400, let's call them ideas or activities that schools could undertake. And just think about a matrix that has the 17 SDGs on top, and then the three university missions plus the management vertically, right? And expectations are not, and this, I want to be clear on this, that schools will do all of them and not even half. This is not about numbers. But we realized that schools and universities tend to specialize in some SDGs, whether this is gender or environmental issues or well-being. And we wanted to give the opportunity to organizations to have enough ideas under the areas in which they are specialized. Results can be saved and can be accessed later for comparison with your own performance time before. And I guess the tool is quite flexible, so it can also be used as an inspiration for when you're designing your sustainability strategy or even the general one. And we're considering the possibility to also certify those universities or schools that do particularly well on certain SDGs. But the time is short, the link is there. So I just encourage you all to have a look at it. And yeah, happy to have feedback. Let me know what you think once you do that.
Yeah, well, thank you, Victoria, for sharing a bit of the history as well as the overview of the tool. Did I hear you say 400 ideas in organizing those across different missions, if you will, as well as the SDGs? What a huge undertaking. Before I shift gears, I want to ask a question, because the business schools part of the SDGs has always been interesting to me. And one piece of data I saw not that long ago suggested that for higher education institutions in general, one of the least guess popular, popular is not the right word. One of the SDGs they tend to touch least is the poverty, number one, eliminating poverty. And when I think about business schools, it seems like almost everything it does, for example, with entrepreneurship and developing new business, really ties into this idea of reducing poverty. So for us at GBSN, it's a big part of what we care about and do. Any comments about this sort of alignment between the SDGs and the kinds of things that business schools do from your experience before we move on to talk about one SDG in particular?
Well, I think, Dan, the easiest thing that I can do here is to refer to those 400 potential activities that business schools can do. Because once you really, I mean, I guess the difficulty was this. SDGs are perceived as something very general. You know, governments create and they create it for countries at the measure at national level or regional level. But what does that mean for my organization? That is the key question, to translate these very broad and global challenges into what that it mean for me. And in that conversation, once you take them one by one and you realize, and then you take university missions as well, one by one, is when you realize that at a business school, if you want to increase the health and well-being, you can do it by opening programs in business and health, for example, but also you can do it just by doing research on that topic. You can do it by engaging with hospitals for their better management, just in the engagement one, but also in the management. You can actually start by taking care of the health and the well-being of your student and your employees, just to put a very simple example, and just one in each of them. If you make that bigger, you actually do realize that as a school, you can influence each of those aspects. Do we expect universities or business school to do it all? Of course not. There will be always something that is related to the strength of the school, is going to be related to its mission, is going to be related to the strategy and where do you want to be in X amount of years. But there are plenty, plenty of things that can be done in each of the aspects.
Fair enough. Thank you, Victoria. I appreciate that response. In fact, that's when I reflect on my question, exactly the response that I would give, that really it depends on your context, your specific mission, vision for the school and institution, but there's lots of opportunity to move forward. Comments on SDG number four in particular. You know, we at GBSN, we care deeply about access to quality education, management education in our case, and it's about, you know, it's definitely related to equity and inclusion, and especially in light of some of the comments that you started with about some of the challenges facing higher education. How are we doing on SDG number four?
No, very good. Would be the short answer. Yeah. All recent reports, unfortunately, state that not just in SDG 4, but also in the others, were lagging behind. In some, were even worse than, you know, pre-COVID levels. But in order to understand why are we there, there are multiple obstacles of all sort of nature that are preventing us to get to a point or even close to get higher education for all, actually. I say that again, quality higher education for all. And first one, maybe the obvious one, is like financial barriers. High tuition fees make higher education inaccessible for low-income students, right? Like, that's obvious. How can we counterbalance this with public funding or financial aid via scholarships, grant loans? Well, this is actually there in many cases, but insufficient. So it's helping, but not as much as we would like to. But beyond the financial barriers, then we also see that there are still large inequalities in the access. So if you're a student from a marginalized community, from rural areas, disadvantaged backgrounds, or a student with disabilities, or in some world regions, a female, you also have less chances to access, say, business school, higher ed. And whether this is because of a lack of information, for tradition or cultural aspects, or lack of even self-perceived capabilities, lack of adaptation at the university, these groups are out and it's very difficult to bring them in. There are still large obstacles. But you know what happened? We are usually saying that in more developed countries, demands is decreasing, but in developing countries, demand is and sometimes exponentially increasing. So the limited capacity of universities sometimes is an issue on itself. They cannot accommodate the growing demand. But sometimes it's also that they are facing faculty shortages. And it's actually everywhere. If you can think, who is not looking for an AI professor these days? A business analytics professor, they are in high demand. There are not enough professionals for all the courses that all universities want to open in those. They are in industry, so a lot of them are being smart and saying, okay, we cannot get them. Either we're partnering with other universities to get joint programs or we're partnering with industry. But unfortunately, it doesn't, obstacles doesn't end up there, because we find, and this is a bit related to what I said before, all these political and regulatory challenges, bureaucracy, visa restriction, rigid accreditation process, that's also been very difficult for universities and business schools to adapt. On top of it, there are universities that are directly affected by political stability, armed conflict, forced migration, like really extreme situation that obviously severely disrupts access to higher ed. And this is just access. Then when we speak about access, I think we make a lot of emphasis that it's not just about bringing a student in, it's about those that have difficulties in coming in, made it all the way through, and they actually graduate and they actually find employment afterwards. I haven't even tapped into quality and the access and the potential obstacle to quality that goes from the technological barriers, the outdated curriculum, the sufficient focus on the skill, the teaching quality, because even when you are in, it's not about only being in, it's about receiving high quality education that it's not always there, unfortunately.
Yeah, wow. And SDG4, one of the things that impressed me about SDG4 is I think the formal recognition finally that lifelong learning is a mm-hmm. critical dimension, and not to mention this issue related to upskilling and reskilling and all of these things over a career lifetime in a world that changes so frequently. And I don't know if you want to comment on lifelong learning. I'm afraid I've made us go over our time together. If you want to tie that into your mention of AI as well, that would be great, because AI is not only shaping what we teach, but it's also enabling us to do things differently and at scale.
So, well, I guess all these potential solutions then to whether this is access, SDG4 or lifelong learning, AI is actually at the core of many of them. It can make higher education more affordable by saving some costs. It can help achieve inclusive online education with a curricula that is or can be personalized, it's flexible, it's skill-oriented, and it can also help you track students to increase their chances of graduation. It can help the student mobility, recognition, and adapt this offer of lifelong learning that you were mentioning to whatever that person needs at that moment in their life. There's obviously still a long way to efficiently integrate AI in business schools, but whether this is because of the financial aspect or the knowledge about how to do it or how to do it best. But what is clear is that lifelong learning, it's a big untapped opportunities. Universities have generally not been there so much, business schools more. But my experience is that they've been mostly focused on executive education. So business school now have the opportunity to train not just executive, but a wide broader audience, mid managers who just been promoted and need managerial skills, mid career professional looking for skilling or reskilling, upskilling anyway, entrepreneurs, innovators, career changers, people in the public sector and the nonprofits. So all those could potentially be targets of business schools for executive education. And for this, going beyond the executive programs, they are emerging all this wide range of short and flexible programs, micro-credential, certificate, corporate training, custom programs, many of which actually are online or a hybrid. But if you're going to do it like that, you need to make sure that you can engage at scales. If we see what people demand, still business skills are the ones that are more in demand, whether these are these technology related, you know, digital skills, AI in business, blockchain, data driven decision making, all the way through leadership. Today, very important that it's actually ethical leadership, crisis management, hello, or entrepreneurship, innovation, sustainability, actually, ESG, but also everything related with diversity, equity, and inclusion. All these things are topics that are highly in demand and business schools can provide, whether it is themselves, whether it is leveraging the close relationship that they have with industry and partnering with them to either co-design or co-deliver these programs, whether this is corporate training or they are opened, but also partnering with governments. I've seen interesting cases in which governments actually have some funding for upskilling and reskilling the labor force, and they see business schools as allies that can do that with. So yeah, it's not just a revenue stream. That, of course, it is, particularly when traditional MBAs can fluctuate, but it's more than that. It can be a way for business school to strengthen alumni relationship, to more generally advance the impact and the thought leadership of the future work. I'm going to leave it there.
Yeah, thank you so much. And thank you all for tolerating me going a little bit longer with that than anticipated, because as we started with, this breadth of things Victoria's involved with is tremendous. And I like how we went from this big list of issues to an equally long list of opportunities, mm-hmm. especially for business schools. We've covered a lot of territory, and you've been great, you know, fantastic in sort of helping us to understand, to delineate some of these things and to see how they fit together. I'm wondering from the conversation, if you have any final remarks, something that you can leave us with that help inspire our work, especially over the next 4 years, I suppose. I hate to sort of narrow it down to that, but any words of inspiration for us working in business schools, business education in a global context?
That's a difficult undertake, but I'll give it a go. I think, as I said, we've covered a lot, but it's time to have the difficult conversations, Dan. And as you say, and from my perspective, it's time to give this tough love. Like, you're not going to love this, but this is the situation. I think it's time for diagnostics of your own school and where you are and where you're going to be. It's time for thorough stakeholder management. It's time for prioritization in a timing with budget cuts, but it's also time for boldness. It's time for seeing the opportunity when others just see the problems. There's no doubt that in the rapidly changing world that we are, I think business schools actually have the opportunity to future-proof their institution, to increase the societal impact, to contribute to the workforce development. They can become learning hubs for professionals at all career stages, but they can also have a very strong voice to shape the future of workforce and beyond, actually. You have, as I say, the skills to manage complex organizations in-house, so use them to better manage or to better face these challenging times, but also use them to help other schools within a university to do the same, that they do lack the management skills that you have. And I guess that looking forward, I just trust that even as much as the value of universities and business school is questioned, I do trust that universities and business school will play a role in the future. But I also know that the current model in most cases not fit for the times coming. So predictions of university mergers, closures that are recently published in the US and the UK, they are unprecedented. So yes, we are at the crossroad because there's a massive need for rethinking and redesigning higher education, but also to clearly communicate the value to individuals, to businesses, to governments, to the society as a whole, and positioning universities and business schools to what they can really be. And they can really, they have the potential to be engines for sustainable socioeconomic development. So opportunities are there, times are tough, but my greatest words of encouragement for you to think big and to think bold.
Thank you so much, Victoria. That means a lot because of your work. I mean, few people are in the kind of position that you are to see that big picture, to understand how the pieces are fitting together, and to offer that kind of advice. It's a complex, changing world. There are lots of challenges, but within those challenges, you see opportunity, right? Mm-hmm. Not for the typical organization, but for the ones that are willing to make bold moves to change themselves and to develop new and innovative strategies. Thank you so much, Victoria, for being with us. And thank you all for being a part of the conversation.
Thank you, Dan. Thank you, GBS.
Thank you. You did a great job, Victoria.